The Bulldogs Extra podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxby's.com/podcast.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, don't win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Welcome in. We are 2 days away from Georgia getting back on the field to face a Kentucky team that is 3-3 with wins over Arkansas, Toledo, and Eastern Michigan. Ryan, I know Georgia-Kentucky probably maybe 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago wouldn't have necessarily been something that you would be like...
Georgia's just going through the SEC East again, you know. Kentucky's the next victim.
Yeah,
undefeated that, Georgia.
That South Carolina game kind of changed things. Kentucky 61st in the Bill Connolly's SP Plus ratings. That is 12th out of 14 SEC teams. Georgia favored by 25. They opened at 27. We're going to be joined by former Georgia quarterback DJ Shockley to give us his thoughts on Georgia and where they're going offensively, you know, in the passing game in particular, the explosiveness. He'll break down the Wildcats and Georgia matchup, and maybe we'll even talk to him a little bit about the transfer portal since he stuck around during his time. Ryan, what's your kind of temperature of this Bulldogs team as you've talked to players this week, as you've seen Kirby Smart answer questions about his offense, his coordinators, or coordinator in particular?
Yeah, well, and, he's dodged that one definitely. About James Coley.
How you feeling? Are this team ready for the to put a whooping on Kentucky?
They better be. I mean, I think that's they know now that they have to win and win convincingly, especially in games like this. You know, of course, they were asked all week about where the team is, and they said they were coming together and they'll be, you know, a better team, and it's a way to bring everybody closer and this and that. And I mean, we'll see. I wouldn't personally like to be Kentucky in this situation because you feel like you're getting a team that is not overlooking anybody anymore after last week's loss, a team hungry that wants to prove that they're still one of the best teams in the nation. And you know, I get a sense that they're going to be fine. Georgia, that is, and come back out and put a, might be a pretty little beat down on Kentucky, just dealing with what I've learned in the past. And I kind of mentioned that in a column that Georgia's always been able to bounce back under Kirby Smart in situations like this. So this will be a time to see how they hold up to that, I guess.
Oh, you did a Saturday column?
I did do a Saturday column in our game day section that you can pick up in newsstands Saturday.
All right. I think I saw that Kentucky was the team that Georgia got 2 years ago, maybe after the Auburn debacle.
Yeah. Seemed to be a close first quarter, and then Georgia really hammered it down.
Yeah, so I guess Kentucky's been in that position. If I think it was the year, I didn't go back and double check it.
I tell you, I was at that game, and you know where? I was sitting in the 600 section.
I was sitting in the press box.
I know. I figured. I'd never been that high before. I was up there, and we had a... I didn't mean high like that, Mark Weiser. Don't look at me like I've never been that high up in the stands. And when that B whatever bomber flew over, man, I felt like I could touch it. Whew.
Yeah, they have it like every game now, don't they?
Yeah, that was impressive, though. But you know what was impressive? Was,
I can't see it in the press box. Yeah, but you can't look up and see it.
You remember we looked over to East stands there, and that thing was, I guess, turning, going back to. I wonder where that thing flies out of. Anyway, I don't think it lands at Ben Epps Airport. But that thing was like banking off in the distance, and it looked like a shark in waters or something. That's how I envisioned it. It was impressive. Definitely was.
All right, Georgia wide receiver Kyrus.
back to the.
Wait, oh, is this an aviation podcast?
All right, go ahead. Sorry, Kyrus.
Kyrus Jackson was out doing interviews last night, and you might remember he had some broken bones, and I think it was his left hand in the Vanderbilt game. So part of his treatment, he revealed, is putting his hand in a bucket of rice. And, you know, kind of I found it to be very interesting. I searched that up this morning. It appears to be uncooked rice. and not they didn't have a picture of Kyrus's hand, but you see a lot of like I guess it's a common deal, and you might know that folks out there, but I'm not familiar with that. I knew that like if you spill water on your iPhone, yeah, you're supposed to do the same thing. You just put it in rice.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it was something you do for a hand or wrist deal.
And, I never heard that either.
I was envisioning one of those kind of big things of cooked white rice that you see at a Chinese buffet. You know, kind of
that burn wouldn't it give you?
Well, it's serious burns. It's not. No, that thing isn't like incredible. It's not like hot, just out of the, off the oven. I mean, it's a cooler. I mean, it keeps it hot, but it's not like obviously you're able to eat the rice that's out of there. That you don't burn true. Yourself.
But I mean, I don't know. That's odd. I mean, the first thing I thought of was the cell phone, like sticking your cell phone in a bag of rice.
Now, are there any crazy home remedies that you've done for minor aches and pains or
legal? No, I'm just kidding.
You're all over the place without this.
No.
Isn't it, what is it, pickle juice people use for?
Cramps, right?
I don't know. Isn't that something that they
pickle juice and mustard, I know.
It's an injury thing for like sports, I think.
Yeah, I think, like I said, for cramps. Yeah, like, it's supposed to help you with cramps.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing outside of, like, making something with lemon and, tea or something that, like right now, when I'm still fighting a cold a little bit. Getting a little lemon, a little tea, but
I don't know the last time I've seen you without a beverage in your hand.
Well, coffee, right, or tea?
Well, I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, I'm more of the OTC medicine type guy. I mean, I'll take a cold and sinus remedy more than anything, and so that's where I stand usually.
All right, what do you need to see out of Georgia Saturday that tells you things are back on track? Is it tweaks to the offense? Is it less predictable play calling? Is it scheming up a way to get wide receivers off press coverage better?
Yes, the last one. I think that's what Georgia absolutely needs to see. And, you know, even if it's crossing routes or using the tight ends, double cross or something to mix it up a little bit, because I think, Kirby was asked about it this week about it does seem like they are just throwing to the sideline, either back shoulder throw or just trying to go over the top with it. Something needs to be changed, and I think those explosive plays is a key. Even though Georgia's offense, methodically goes down the field, I think it would be nice to see them hit a long play or, even, I don't know, pull out a bag of tricks, hit something that, heck, the Mississippi State flea flicker a couple years ago was something new and different. I guess they were expecting Georgia to pound them with a run there, so that's why it worked so well. But I don't know. I know a lot of teams are going to be watching that film last week and see what South Carolina did so well. So they're going to have to mix it up a little bit and see what happens. But that's what I'd be looking for, is them to hit a big play or a couple big plays to try to break out of a little bit of a funk, I guess you'd say.
Hey, I think it's okay that you can try to get a big play in the punt return game. I mean, I think Don Blaylock can...
No, fair catch.
Well, here's what... I mean, I think most of the time he's had a right to call a fair catch because there have been guys kind of bearing down on him, but what can you do to make that not the case? Do you need to bring more of a pass rush? I mean, a punt block rush?
Well, no. I think that was one thing last week. I think a lot of people groaned because he called a fair catch. It looked like he had, 25 yards of free space.
Yeah.
But then you look down and it was like eight South Carolina guys running at him because Georgia did bring some people. So I guess in that sense he was probably told to fair catch it.
Well, I mean, a lot of times he's backed up inside his 20. So we don't really want to deal Tyler Simmons had a fumble like that this season. So I don't know. But I mean, obviously it would be good to get some really great field position.
I think once he gets more confidence, more, a little more seasoning back there as a punt returner. I mean, he's still only six games into his college career. So, but yeah, it would be nice for him to give it a try one time at least, see what can happen.
Okay, I'm not sure I heard any come-to-Jesus type meetings from players. Actually, even Cade Mays yesterday was asked whether the offensive line kind of got together, and he was kind of like, well, just our normal meetings. I think, obviously, they're not happy, but they know they've been here before, slipped up, still got to Atlanta each of the last 2 years. So I guess they're kind of, they're not in huge panic mode, although the fan base clearly might be getting close to that. Kirby had another chance to say something nice about James Coley this week, and he really didn't. I mean, he's not one to kind of deviate from his answer. If he says that, here's our goals on offense is to protect the ball, make explosive plays, and I can't remember what the third one was, but in general, he's kind of, you know, he'll evaluate Coley as the season ends, you know, at least publicly. He's not going to come out there and say that, but silence sometimes is...
Yeah, it tells you a lot, doesn't it?
Tells you something, but this is an important game and an important next six regular season games for Coley, presumably. All right, no Lawrence Cager this week, and I'm not sure about Florida. He's got the shoulder and rib deal. How much does that hurt?
Yeah, that's big. I mean, he's developed into Georgia's top receiver and probably part of the reason that late in the game they were struggling. No offense to Kiaris, but the reason Kiaris was in the game late last week was because they were without Lawrence. And I know that was, you know, when you're a guy like Fromm who seemed like he had built up a little bit of a bond with Cager and you know, whether that's back shoulder throw or the route he runs and what he might be expecting – yeah, that's a big deal, if you ask me.
Are Georgia currently third in the SEC East at 2-1, Missouri 2-0, Florida 3-1, South Carolina 2-2. The Gators still have to go to Missouri, as well as obviously playing at South Carolina this weekend. NCAA has that postseason ban on Missouri. Now, they're still appealing if that gets lifted, and some people think that it's got a chance to happen. Certainly will get interesting. That'll be an interesting November to see, you know, who's going to be representing the East. I still think Georgia's in the best favored. At least that's what ESPN's playoff predictor says. So, but obviously a little bit more dicey than it was a week ago.
Yeah. Who does Missouri have? Who have they beaten so far? Do you have that off the top of your head? I know they beat South Carolina, obviously. Sorry to put you on the spot. I was just wondering who they had.
No, they have their best game. Obviously, they still have Georgia. They still have Florida.
I was wondering who they had out of the West.
Isn't their crossover is... I can't even remember.
It's
not the toughest.
I was always thinking they had like A&M as a crossover since they came in together. Is that who their crossover?
Okay.
Since they came in together, that would make sense. Okay.
Yeah. Some bowl projections are active. I guess they come out every week, but I guess maybe looked at it a little bit more. Cotton Bowl. This is for Georgia. I'm talking about Outback Bowl, Sugar Bowl rematch with Texas. That would actually be fun to me.
I like Bourbon Street.
Well, I just think the Texas, I mean.
Know what we're not getting near, though, and neither should Uga. No getting near Bevo.
He's got more reinforcements. He's got a tighter pen to keep himself in. So anyway, don't forget to shoot us a review at the at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts app, and thanks for tuning in each week. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, joining us now is former Georgia quarterback DJ Shockley, now an SEC Network analyst, and you've seen him midweek on the SEC Now show. Saturday, he'll be in Nashville for Missouri Vanderbilt. What's going on, DJ?
Not much, man. I appreciate you having me on and enjoying the middle part of this season. So starting to heat up a little bit around the country, especially in the SEC, so it's going to be fun.
All right, DJ, a lot of talk about the Georgia offense this week, and wanted to get your take on that, being a former SEC championship-winning quarterback for the Bulldogs. What do you see as the biggest issues coming off the South Carolina game, and how do you expect the coaches to address them heading into Kentucky?
You know what, I thought the biggest thing in this ball game that was kind of exposed a little bit, and I think a lot of teams are going to do it going forward, especially they have the players on the back end. And when I go back and watch the tape, the one thing that I look at is the lack of separation on the outside with the receivers. And it wasn't at all times. It wasn't, you know, on certain situations. It was when South Carolina wanted to play man coverage. And it usually happened on third down. And as we know, those are the most critical downs in a ball game is the third down, and South Carolina said, all right, we're going to use our big guys up front, we're going to man guys on the outside, and we're going to challenge the receivers. And I thought Georgia wasn't able to separate from the defensive backs at a lot of times, and it even created tighter windows. And I think a lot of people are enamored with the back shoulder throw, which is Fromm does it with the best of them, but I think it comes down to, because the receivers aren't winning and they're even with the defensive back, the best possible throw that gives your player a chance to win is the back shoulder. And Georgia has to find a way to create separation, whether it's from formation, whether it's by motion. A lot of teams, what they'll do is they'll get into a bunch set or they'll motion a guy where the defensive back has to back off. So now you can create that separation when you're running. Those are some of the glaring things you look at, especially this past weekend. And you think about some of the defenses you're going to play in Florida, who has a good defensive front. They got a good secondary. Auburn, good defensive front, pretty athletic secondary. And they're going to watch this South Carolina tape, and they're going to see, okay, on the outside, they challenged Georgia's young receivers, and they weren't able to win at all times. So I think that's probably the one thing that Georgia has to do is find a way to create bigger windows for Fromm to throw into, and those receivers have to do a better job, too, of winning on the outside.
Hey, DJ, thanks for being with us, of course. You kind of touched on it there, but how much of this comes down to James Coley and, you know, schemes that he can do better? And what's your impressions of the job he's done through six games so far as the offensive coordinator?
Well, Ryan, I think it has a lot to do with Coley. Obviously, he's the guy who's pulling the trigger on it, and he has to, I guess, kind of set those guys up to be in position to win. And I thought he's done a good job so far. Obviously, the competition hasn't been to what is about to face. Notre Dame was a really good football team, and they challenged you as well in the run game. They challenged you with physicality. Coming to this year, I thought Coley would stretch the field a lot more than they have done. Obviously, they want to stretch them vertically and stretch them horizontally. We see all the bubble screens. We've seen the quick jet sweep, stuff like that. But down the field is where I think Georgia can improve, and I think that's where Coley will try to improve going forward, is stretching the defense, softening them up a little bit more. Georgia's always been a downhill run team, and they will always be that. But then when they do get into their spread sets, I want to see more down-the-field concepts, more down-the-field RPO-type plays that gives those guys a chance to win. I was watching a couple of different plays where Georgia comes off the RPO, and then there's three hitches on the outside, and the corners, the linebackers are all just sitting on it. You got to find ways to create that separation on the outside. So I think Coley's done a pretty good job so far, but I think last week was a good eye-opening experience, and it was good to be able to go back, I'm sure, and watch that film and say, okay, here's where we can get better. And I think number one is we got to stretch the field better.
With the wide receivers having trouble getting off press man coverage, is that something that can be fixed in practice, you know, if not this week, then during the off week in terms of some fundamentals? Or is it a matter of losing Mecole Hardman, Riley Ridley, even, you know, an experienced guy at tight end in Isaac Nauta?
You know what, I think it's a combination of all those things, but I think one of the number one things is you don't have that Mecole Hardman guy right now. You don't have somebody right now who just scares you about taking the top off the defense. You don't have a guy who can run right through the middle. We saw Mecole do that for a number of years and take when he goes to the house with it. We've seen a couple guys do some good stuff like Blake Lock catch a pass and, you know, go the difference. We've seen some of the good back shoulder catches by Cager, but nobody, I think, right now scares anybody on the defensive side of the ball as far as running by him. So I think, yes, technique-wise, fundamental-wise, there are things you can do in practice to work on releasing. You can work on getting the corner in your face and work on the inside or outside or how you spin it to get into a particular route. Those are things you can definitely work on. And it's also by formation, how they get aligned. Sometimes you can have a tighter split for certain stuff. Corners don't usually like to be in a tighter split when a guy's on the numbers or closer to the hash. They just play off coverage. So there are different ways to disguise it for the receivers. And these are all things that I'm sure they'll learn on film and then go into practice and say, okay, here's how we're going to alleviate some of the issues.
All right, DJ, being the former quarterback you are, I want you to break down Jake Fromm for us a little bit. You know, he had a great season coming in last week, throws three interceptions. Of course, one of those was kind of fluky that it bounced off of Tyler Simmons' hands. But what have you seen from him? What can he do better going forward? Is some of that passing game, I guess, lack of explosiveness on him? Or, you know, what's it kind of break down to with Jake?
Well, you know, Fromm has been the ideal guy for Georgia. And I think what you ask him to do at the line of scrimmage, what you ask him to do throughout a ball game, I don't think he gets much credit for, and I don't think a lot of people know about. He gets Georgia in and out of a bunch of different plays, whether it's the run game or the pass game, that makes them successful. So I thought Jake has done an outstanding job of leading this football team, and he has become more of a guy that they depend on, especially when they need big plays to happen. I mean, you go back to that Notre Dame game when you needed some big-time throws, or that Tennessee game, he was a guy who did it for you. As far as the last ball game, that's going to happen. As a QB, you have some of those type of throws. You have ones you want back. And I think in that ball game, because of what you mentioned, the lack of explosive plays, and this is something that Kirby has mentioned too. I mean, they haven't had the explosive runs and passes that they want. They've had some here and there, but they haven't had a lot of them. And as a quarterback, when you're used to moving the football down the field, you're used to being efficient with the football, sometimes you get frustrated and you force the ball. And I thought, especially the one before half, that was an uncharacteristic throw of Frost. He wanted to make something happen so bad with pressure in the face, off his back foot. That's just something we don't hardly ever see him do. And that just comes from the frustration of that first half, not being able to make the big plays or pushing the ball down the field that they're used to. So, Fromm has been good, man. He will continue to improve. And knowing him over the past 2 years, this is a guy I know locked himself in the film room, and he's going to make sure that type of game does not happen again on his watch. And this offense will get better than they were last week. But, you know, I think it all starts with him, and he is a big factor. And Fromm is, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the country right now, numbers-wise, the way he plays, and just general, is a guy that you want to have as your quarterback each week you step out there.
Well, as good as he's been, obviously, and as much as he does at line, is it still safe to say you wouldn't want a guy like, you know, or you wouldn't want Georgia's offense, I guess, to throw the ball 51 times like they did the other day? Is that safe to say that, you know, that's not Georgia?
No, right. No, I mean, I think we both know that's not Georgia. I mean, anytime we see that happen, I think the crazy stat is like 0-for-5 or something like that when we throw it over 34 times or something, whatever. Over the years, we know this is a physical group. This is a team. This is the reason why Kirby went out and got all these guys that are coming in on the offensive line, 6'4", 6'5", 315-plus. Everybody's huge because they want to maul people. They want to impose their will on people up front and change that line of scrimmage. So running the offense, and running is what Georgia wants to do to set up the pass. Georgia wants to be balanced, I know for sure, and pass when you have to or need to. And I don't think you want to be in a situation where you're in obvious passing situations throughout a ball game. And Georgia hasn't fared well in those ball games. So Georgia's a team we both know. The run game must be priority number one.
DJ Kirby's game management in these tight games, you know, late games, crunch time, have been kind of examined and put under the microscope. What have you seen in that regard, particularly against South Carolina, when you looked at some of those calls, you know, whether late in regulation there or, you know, just calling a timeout, I guess, in overtime?
Yeah, you know what, man, I think about those situations, and it has to be tough to have to put all that on Kirby. I'm sure he, you know, he's not doing that all by himself. He has a couple of guys who he's leaning on to give him good advice. I think about some of those situations where, hey, I think it was 8 or 9 seconds or 7 seconds on the clock, and, you know, you're wondering, should we run another play? Do we have time to throw one to the sideline or whatever it may be? Mm-hmm. You end up getting the penalty, pushing it back. You know, Kirby, I heard him mention it and say, hey, we've been in this position before. We've done it with less seconds on the clock. I think every situation is different. Even if you've done it in different games, I think depending on where you are in the ball game, how do you feel about, you know, your kicker, how you feel about the operation of what's going on, the weather, all that kind of stuff matters when you think about, is it a field goal? Should I go for it? The time management part of it. So I think it all depends on the situation. I think Kirby has done a decent job of it, but there definitely are opportunities and times where you say, I would have did something different there. But, you know, we're all couch coaches at times, too, and, you know, it's tough being in that spot, I know.
Of course, Kentucky went with Lynn Bowden last week at quarterback. Sawyer Smith apparently back healthy. You know, do they stick with Bowden? Do they go with both quarterbacks? Yeah, how effective will that be, you know, not letting out, I guess, what their plan is at quarterback just yet?
Honestly, if I got the call, I'm going with Bowden all day. I mean, you watch what he brings to this offense, and you watch the athleticism, you watch what kind of issues he can prevent from the quarterback position. And I think you want your best athlete or best player to have the ball in your hand at all times. And I was watching their last game last week against Arkansas, and you look at some of the stuff he was doing. You know, they're so enamored with him running the football, they forget about the tight end. They forget about the receiver. They forget about the other running backs because all eyes are on him. And when you have to prepare for that, it forces all 11 guys on your defense to be have to be on the same page at all times. And if one guy's not doing their particular job, then guess what? Here comes a big play. I think Bowden gives them the best opportunity to move the football, to score points, and it's just tough for four quarters for all 11 guys in that defense to play the scheme exactly right and be in a position you're supposed to. And when he takes off, I mean, he runs like a, you know, he's a receiver. He runs like a receiver, has a speed like a receiver. You know he played quarterback in high school, so you know he can throw it. And now he's got a second week under his belt of here's what's going to make him comfortable inside the pocket. And they're going to find plays that are good for him throwing the football, then also they're going to construct some plays that are good for him in the run game. So I think he gives them the best opportunity to score points and gives them the best opportunity to compete.
DJ, obviously Georgia's had some slow starts last few games, trailed a couple times. Do you think this will be a game where Kentucky is within striking distance in the third quarter, or you expect this one to unfold differently?
I expect this one to unfold a little bit differently. I think if you go back to last week, and if I know Kirby the way I do, he's going to make sure these guys are ready from the opening kickoff. And I expect the focus to be there. I expect this team to come out and play with a different level of intensity. And I expect them to kind of overmatch this Kentucky team. Kentucky has given up a bunch of yards this year on the ground. They've done a decent job on offense trying to create big plays, but in this ball game, I expect all the I's to be dotted and the T's to be crossed, and this Georgia team to come out with a renewed focus, especially knowing there's no room for error on the rest of the season. I mean, you have no room for any more hiccups, and if you want to achieve all your goals, which are still there, it starts with your focus on Kentucky. And I expect them to come out in this ball game to get what we expect out of hand in that second half.
We're here with DJ Shockley once again, beloved Bulldog. And one of the reasons you are such a beloved Bulldog, of course, well, you had a fantastic senior year, but you also stuck around with Georgia and went through some times, you know, where you held in there. And I know that's one of the reasons Bulldog Nation loves you so much. But, of course, nowadays with it seeming to be easier to transfer and stuff like that, and, of course, what Georgia has gone through with a couple key transfers, your thoughts on the transfer portal and would that have changed? I don't want to ruin your beloved liking around here, but would times have been different if the transfer portal was a thing back then?
You know what? That's a good question, man. You know what? It's difficult because I love the Bulldog Nation. I love being a Georgia Bulldog. I enjoy my time there. And for me, I always felt like I could play. I always felt like I could be a huge contributor. I felt like when I came to the University of Georgia, I had a goal in mind. I wanted to get my all for that university. And this was just a place I wanted to be. As far as the portal goes these days, it's kind of a double-edged sword going forward for a lot of these kids. I mean, when we hear about some of the kids like the Fields, and we hear about Jacob Beasley, and we hear about all the guys who end up leaving and going and being successful. But on the other hand, there's probably another 30, 40 guys who leave and they're nowhere. So it's tough right now, and I think you got to make the right decision for you as a player, as a you're thinking about your career. And I think you have to know the place you're going into that you really have a solid opportunity to play or start at that particular place. Because if not, you're going to be in the same position. And for me, the idea of being unsure of where I was going to go and if I had that opportunity was the biggest thing for me. And I still think back to it now, and I still stay true to it right now, that when I signed my letter of intent at the University of Georgia, regardless of good and bad, that's where I wanted to be. And I think to this day I still would have that same approach to it. Obviously, other people think differently, and they want to play right away and all that kind of stuff, but that's just my approach to it, and I felt like I wanted to be a guy that people could depend on regardless of things are going good or bad. And that's just my mentality with a lot of stuff I do in life, and not, you know, trying to bail out on it if it doesn't go my way. But, you know, every situation, every kid, every career is different. And ultimately, you got to do what's best for you. And you can't really dictate it off what other people are doing or saying.
DJ, we'll wrap up with you with asking you, the SEC East, how do you see it unfolding, and do you think Georgia can and will run the table to get to Atlanta?
You know what? That's going to be tough, man, because you look at Florida and you say, wow, they went to Death Valley and played in that atmosphere and went toe-to-toe with them for a majority of that ball game. I had a lot of question marks about Trask. Could he really run this offense? Could he really give them an opportunity to win his 4 points? And he did. And Florida's going to be a tough out. Obviously, their schedule is pretty tough, but they have no margin of error either. And they know probably that game or the Missouri game comes down to the East. And Missouri is another team that's really sneaky. And what I think gives them a big edge going forward is their defense is playing lights out. Kelly Bryant has rejuvenated that offense. He's a winner. He's a competitor. He's played a lot of football. And he's going to give them a chance to win in every single ball game. But I still believe Georgia, from top to bottom, has a better core of players, athletes, to get the job done. And it won't be easy, but I think Georgia still has the best track to get to Atlanta and try to win an SEC championship.
TJ, as always, we appreciate your time and your insight, and we ask our listeners to check out DJ on the SEC Network before you tune into the 6 p.m. Georgia game on Saturday, and have a great weekend.
Awesome, man. Mark, Ryan, appreciate you guys, and always love the Dog Nation, so appreciate you having me on.
All right, we're getting closer. Be sure and bookmark GeorgiaFloridaRadio.com for Georgia Florida Week as we launch a 24-hour, 7-day-long pop-up radio station celebrating the historic rivalry. And it's going to go live on October 26th in preparation for the November 2nd showdown in Jacksonville. This is Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis alongside. This is the Bulldogs Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. All right, we didn't tease it, but it is time for the world famous, well, at least some people like it, the over-under.
I might throw in a little music for this one. We need some theme.
You have the ability to do that? All right. I'm looking forward. I'm going to have to listen back to this and see what that sounds like. All right, passes for Jake Fromm this week. What was the number last week? 51?
I'll go under.
Was it 51?
Yeah.
That's not it. That's not it.
Oh, sorry.
51 last week. The number this week is 26, and I'm going to go under.
Yeah, that seems like a 18-21 type of deal for him and run heavy. And, of course, as DJ just told us, that is not Georgia's offense when Jake throws it 51 times. So, I mean, 26 does seem like a good amount.
Is that Eric Zeier's number? Offense? I think that's his
yeah,
offense.
Right. Yeah, he would have to.
All right.
He'd have to put his arm in a bag of rice after.
I think it's in the 23 range, so I'm going under.
I'm going to go 18-21.
All right, turnovers for Georgia. 4 last week. The number this week is 1.5. And I'm going to go under because that was an outlier-type game. Look, there might be one fumble or something. I don't know, but it's going to be under.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go under. I think that was a heavy emphasis this week. Not saying something fluky can't happen again, like a ball bounce off somebody's hands for an interception. But, yeah, I'm gonna go that the Bulldogs are flawless this week.
All right, sacks. This is from the defensive perspective. How many will they get? They had 0 last week. The number is 1.5. And I'm going to go under. I think they're going to get 1 sack. They're going to bring Bowden down once, but that'll be it.
Right. You know, the thing you always have to consider is maybe Bowden's scrambling. It looks like he's running a long time, and he gets, you know, tackled for a 1-yard loss or something. I guess they qualify that as a sack. You know, he reminds me a lot of the kid last week that came in. You know, just kind of water buggish and can move around, cause problems. I just don't feel confident in Georgia racking up too many sacks. I'll go under with you.
Bowden's a much better runner than that kid.
Well, yeah, but...
I mean, he's going to do a lot more design runs, and he's...
Well, that kid last week, though, I still felt Call's issues, Call's problems.
Right. Yeah, no, this guy's going to... He ran the ball 20-something times last week. Hey, check out Game Day. I wrote about him in there, so I can't remember. But all right, explosive plays for Georgia, and I'm defining that as 20 or more, which is Georgia defines it as 12 for a run play, 16 for a pass play.
Kirby broke that down for us this past week.
They had one last week of 20 or more. The number this week is 3, and I'm going to say they're going to go over because I think Mr. Swift is going to have maybe 3 of those himself.
That's a tough one. You would think that they would have focused on that and go over. I'm going to stick with under on this just because they hadn't really proved it. Until they prove it to me, I'm not going to think that they can do it, even though it might be a focus this week and might take a couple more shots. Yeah, maybe hit. So, one thing I noticed last week, George backed up close to their end zone. I think they did a play action to Swift, and Jake ended up throwing it to the right, and Swift was – I mean, there was nobody within – 20 yards of him on that side of the field. And if Jake would have dropped it down to him, they would have had an explosive play because he might have taken it for like a 85-yard touchdown. But, maybe they saw that on film, and that could be a thing they focus on this week too, is to, hit Swift out of the backfield like that. So, yeah, but I'm going to stick with under. Sorry to get long-winded on that.
All right, we alluded to Don Blalock in the punt return game. Number of punts that will be returned this week for Georgia. The number is 1.5. They had 0 last week. I'm going to go under. I think it will be 1. And I say that also because Kentucky's punter leads the nation in punting.
Oh, like hang time or distance, I guess? Is it a per average punt? Is that what you're saying? That he is per average, like average punt is long? Is that what he leads in? I just wonder, like...
Yes, in average.
Hang time.
And they're up there in net punting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would have to say under from what we've seen out of Dom with, fair catch seems to be all they're asking him to do and just catch it. So I'll stick with you. I'll go under too.
All right, last one is missed field goals by Rodrigo Blankenship.
Man.
He had 2 last week. The number is 0.5, and I'm going to go under. I don't think he's missing anything.
You got to weigh the mental aspect with this. But Rod's been so good, and you don't want to pile on the guy, and of course he's been from 50, and I think he's 3 for 3 from 50, or he's 3 for 4 because he had that one block. But I'll go under. I think Rod's bouncing back. He's such a good guy, and as we learned over the past 3 years, especially how much Bulldog Nation loves him and they rally around him. So stick with the under.
All right, we're going to do our weekly picks now, and check it out online if you haven't already done it for the week. It's under our contest tab. Ryan will probably give you the actual website name or the...
Yeah, go to onlineathens.com/contest, and you'll see several things you can actually get in the mix for, but at the top is Wiser Than Wiser. Click on that. If you haven't registered yet, it's quick and easy. Just fill out a couple of questions, and you will be in our Pick'ems game, which is quite a – we have quite a few people in there, so including Mark Weiser, who is in third place at the time.
That's right.
My name doesn't even pop up on the top 80 leaderboard list.
I don't think mine does either. It just says Mark W.
If you put mine in, my number doesn't even...
Gotcha. Yeah. All right, here are the picks, and this has been a longer the podcast than we expected because DJ was so awesome.
Yeah, he was. Great.
We are going to just not really give you the breakdown of Syracuse's right tackle. We're just going to tell you who we'd like to win, basically. All right, Pitt is at Syracuse. Hey, I actually had Pitt number 25 in my AP ballot a couple weeks ago, but they were off last week, so I dropped them out because some other teams were, deserving. But I think Pitt's playing pretty good football. Lost to Penn State. I can't remember their other loss, but it wasn't a bad one particularly. I'm taking Pitt to go to Syracuse and win in upstate New York.
Since we're doing rapid fire here, I'll go Pitt.
All right, Florida State at Wake Forest, and Wake Forest is a team that also was ranked at one point coming off a loss recently. Seminoles got drilled by Clemson. I think they're going to come and go and win at what's the name of that football stadium? It's not Lawrence Joel. That's basketball. But whatever. Give it to the Seminoles to get a big ACC road win.
Yeah, I don't see where you get that confidence from. I'm going to stick with Wake Forest.
And I just think they're due. It's Florida State. I mean,
he looked terrible for 2 years.
All right. I like to mix it up, all right?
There you go.
NC State's at Boston College, and I'm gonna have the boys from Chestnut Hill hold serve at home. I'm going with BC.
You know, I think NC State's played a little well. My sister lives like 15 minutes outside of Raleigh, so that factored into my decision. Go NC State.
Toledo at Ball State. What's that, Big Mac action?
Was that a Tuesday night game? Did we miss it?
Oh, was it?
No. I don't know. I don't think so. It wouldn't surprise me.
I'm taking Toledo.
Oh, man. Yeah, I took Toledo, too. I think I actually did a little research on that one just to see what I'd pick in that, since I had no clue about either team. I stuck with Toledo.
All right, Florida at South Carolina. And you know what? The Gamecocks showed a lot last week, obviously. I think they're giving out these, replica Will Muschamp grandfatherly glasses that he's wearing on the sideline.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As a fan promotion. So I like that. But I'm going to take the Gators coming off their own loss last week.
Yeah, we have a pic of him, you know, when Halinski got injured last week. He was yelling at the refs, and he has those glasses down on like below the bridge of his nose, and it just looked very funny. Give me Florida.
All right, next one is TCU at Kansas State. I'm going to take Kansas State, another team that I had was riding their bandwagon early in the year. I'm going to take them at home in Little Manhattan.
I believe I went with you since they're playing at home. They went into Mississippi State earlier this year and won, so give me Kansas State.
Baylor at Oklahoma State, Baylor.
I went Baylor as well.
Unbeaten Baylor.
And Oklahoma State, they really hadn't had the success under I'm a man, I'm 40, now that he's 50.
53-ish probably by now.
Yeah, yeah.
Tulane's at Memphis, and a little home cooking, a little bit of ribs, a little bit of Elvis. Give me Memphis.
Oh, man, that sounds so good. We're approaching lunchtime here, too, on this Thursday. No, I took Tulane on the road. Give me Tulane. Green Wave.
All right, Texas A&M is at Ole Miss, and I don't know what the deal is. Somebody was asking Jimbo Fisher on the SEC teleconference. I mean, what is he going to say? Basically saying, you know, is the program where you thought it would be at this time? I mean, is he going to say, no, we're way behind?
We suck.
Of course he said it's where we want to be. It's not showing up in the win column for them. And, you know, I don't know what that November game here looks like now with with the Aggies coming to town. But Ole Miss is not one of the better teams in the SEC. I think the Aggies, I'm going to have a lot of confidence in them to go on the road to win this one.
I believe with former Bulldog commit John Rice Plumlee.
Yeah, he's playing well.
Playing well. I think I picked Ole Miss at home.
Georgia could use him in the quarterback room here.
Yeah, especially if we look ahead to next year. But, yeah, give me Ole Miss playing at home. John Rice coming into his own. Give me them.
All right, Air Force at Hawaii. And Air Force, I'm going to go with them because they're probably – are they the best service academy this season, or is that Army? I'm taking Air Force.
I picked Air Force as well. I don't know anything about Hawaii, but I know Air Force – they beat one of the former Georgia coordinator teams this year. Was it Colorado or was it Colorado State? One of those. So I picked Air Force.
Hawaii, like luau's, they got waves over there. They have.
I've heard of it.
It's a kind of off the mainland.
It's the 52nd state. Not a joke. That's a joke.
All right, Michigan at Penn State. This is the ESPN game day deal. I think they're doing
a white out
there. Hey, James Franklin, he's been pretty good with the media. Did you see this clip about something? He was asked about one of his players. I don't know which one, but basically wanted his parents, the parents of the players, to go to the Poconos, get one of those hotel rooms that have like a heart-shaped jacuzzi or bathtub or whatever, and basically come away, you know, with the next of those players coming up. But like, he wants another brother, so 18 years down the line, I guess. And so
trying to breed his next wave.
Yeah,
of players.
So Franklin is clearly at ease. He's unbeaten. He hadn't played necessarily the toughest schedule, but entertaining to the media.
Like trying to get up there like a Washington State's coach, get viral, I guess. Yeah,
I don't know. Is James Franklin going to be the next Southern Cal coach? Will he be coming to the SEC eventually again? Mm. All right. Anyway, hey, how about – by the way, I'm taking Penn State. Who are you taking?
Yeah, Penn State.
All right, Kentucky at Georgia. We might have talked about that game a little bit.
Yeah, let's break that down a little.
I think Georgia's going to probably cover the spread. I don't know if I said that in the game day, but –
Like I said earlier, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I think, you know, there's been all this talk about, you know, making plays on the outside in the passing game. Sure, you have to do that. But this game in particular, I think Georgia's going to run crazy over Kentucky, who has been vulnerable to the run. Swift went up against Kentucky last year and had one of his best games as a Bulldog. And I think that's going to be the way that Georgia just pounds them to submission.
Like I said earlier, I would not want to be Kentucky in this position with Georgia coming off that loss. You don't have the team you had last year. Neither does Georgia, I guess you could say, but I think they rebound well because they are motivated a little extra now. And I mean, you can call that a myth or whatever, but to me, Georgia has come off of bad losses the past couple years and responded really well, and I think this is the case.
I think Lynn Bowden's going to make some plays. I think Sawyer Smith is going to come in the game and try to attack DJ Daniel or whoever's, assuming that Tyson Campbell's still not back from his turf toe. We don't really know. We haven't been out there since Tuesday where he was going through the motions in practice. So we'll see. Last game is our pick'em game. It's Washington hosting Oregon. Big Pac-12 game. I don't know if it's an after dark game. I don't know what time that kicks off. But I'm taking Jacob Eason and the Huskies to pull the upset, beat Oregon 28-27.
I do know what time that kicks off because I had to put it in the paper.
Go ahead.
It's a 3:30 game on ABC.
All right.
I don't know why everybody. You know, why did you pick Washington? Because it's at home. Is that?
Yeah, it's at home. And they're coming off a win.
I think I had a Oregon pretty easily in this one. I want to say I had like a 34-20 year, something like that. I can't remember exactly what I put into our system at onlineathletes.com/contest. Mark Wiser than Wiser, but I did pick Oregon to win pretty handily.
All right, we'll see how that plays out. Everyone, enjoy your football weekend, and we'll be back during the off week next week to break down kind of the state of the Bulldogs at that point. So thanks for listening to the Bulldogs Extra Podcast from the Athens Banner-Herald, and you can drop us a line, mwiser@onlineathens.com, rdennis@onlineathens.com, and you know where to find us on Twitter, Mark Wiser, and
rhinodennis19.
There you go. And the podcast, The Bulldogs Extra, presented each week by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. So stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxby's.com/podcasts.